Welcome to Extra Points. Now here's your host, Cousin Sal, and his pal, Dave Damashek.
All right, welcome to Extra Points, part of the Extra Points Podcast Network. Cousin Sal coming to you with his good pal, Dave Damashek. We're already arguing about the NCAA tournament. Flip a coin. I asked him to pick an upset. He's like, flip a coin. It doesn't matter. My God.
Well, that's right. It would be equally. First of all, Sal.
Stop it.
Good day to you, sir.
Yes, good to you. I should say we need to hurry this up because Dave's parents are in town. His lovely mom and dad are in town. And I know he wants to get back with them. So let's make this a 15 or 20 minute long podcast.
Please, my opening statement will exceed that with the greatest of ease. A couple of things, though. I just picked up old Mo Damashek and the old man at the airport. Couple of updates. One, my old man informed me that he's been looking at the spring training box scores. He doesn't really know very many of these Red Sox, so that's a concern for him going into the season. One. Two, they have listened to every second of every show we've done so far.
And?
You'll be stunned to learn they love them all. And
really?
They really like Kevin Hench, too, on -3, although they find him a little too dirty for their taste. He four-letter words it a little bit too much. And lastly, unrelated, I was speaking with one Eddie Spaghetti, the producer, last night as we were rejoicing. The best bet on the planet is whoever's playing the Sabres -1.5. I think we are on track at the time of this recording for it to happen for the 11th time in 14 games, which is a crazy run of ineptitude by a professional hockey team.
I was looking at that. I bet the Pens today. Thank you. Much to you and Eddie. I listened to you guys. The Parlay Kid also had them. I had them on a parlay with the Minnesota Wild, and that one, I assume the Pens held on. They were up 4-1 late, right?
They were up 4-1 at the intermission when you and I joined up here for this conversation. But they play again tomorrow, so do it again. Best bet in the land, FanDuel.com/-3. You'll be glad you did it. But I was speaking to Eddie Spaghetti, and he announced that we were talking about Joel, producer Joel, babyface Joel.
Right.
And Spaghetti, unsolicited, just said out of the blue, I really like Joel.
What?
So we're really coming together as a family.
No one really likes Joel.
Well,
really?
Spaghetti does. So how about that? So I just wanted to get you up to speed on everything that's been
Spaghetti's
going on.
Spaghetti's not here. Oftentimes he'll join us. Joel, all right, you have a fan out there. That's good. I mean, he's within our group, but it counts. No?
That's one. We got one.
and Dave's father. Dave's parents, right? Both all of us.
Yeah, they have not weighed in directly about that. But yeah. Boy, I wish we'd been recording for the 20 minutes before we actually got going because we had some good sports-related debate.
Yeah, forget it now. We got this tournament. Yes, you said, I don't know. I don't know what your problem is with this still. We're going to have good teams in the Final Four and in the Elite Eight, and you still think it's a coin flip. And it's not even a curmudgeonly take because – back in the 60s, there were 32 teams in this thing. Like, so what? I don't even know what you're going back to, what you're longing for here.
Because it's, come on, listen, you know it's different now. teams, it was anomalous when a guy didn't play for at least 3 years. Michael Jordan played for 3 years in college, for goodness sakes. Very few guys went pro. I don't begrudge anybody who's 18 and can instantly become a multimillionaire by entering the NBA draft. I'm all for it. I'm just saying it's obviously degraded college basketball. What to pretend that it hasn't is silliness.
It's decent quality. I don't know how it could be possible. The NBA is worse and college basketball is worse, but
it is funny. I'd rather watch college basketball games than NBA. I'm just in the regular season. I'm just pointing out that the quality of play is degraded and picking who's going to win any of these games is you know, abject foolishness. That said, let's try to do it.
Let's do it.
I love it.
Let's go underdogs into the weekend now. You'll hear this at earliest, probably Thursday morning. The tournament action starts up again Saturday and Sunday. Let me just give some odds here. Gonzaga was the big favorite going in. You could get probably +220 for them heading into the tournament, and now it's +155. All they did was beat up on the 16 seed and the, I don't know, 8-9 seed Oklahoma, who kept it around, doubled it right around 10 or 12 points, but they're +155. Baylor, another number one seed that looks good, is 4-1 odds. They were about 6-1 heading in. Michigan, 7-1. They may get Isaiah Livers back, may not, kind of keeping it close to the vest. Houston, a 2 seed, 9-1, Alabama, 2 seed, 10-1. And then Loyola Chicago, 16-1. And Dave, that's who I'm going against. I'm taking Oregon State. I've had enough of all the sister geniuses out there. Everybody loves this team. They like them. They love that Cameron Krutwig. I gave him my athlete of the week on Monday, but I've had enough. This is a real team. This is a good coach and Mike Boynton, Oklahoma State. They have a lot of time to prepare. That's one thing Illinois didn't really have, time to prepare for this Sister Jean magic show. But, you know, they held Tennessee to 17 points. Talk about a defensive team. They held them to 17 points below their average. They held Cade Cunningham to 6 for 20 from the field. I think this is going to be an ugly, ugly game. Nothing against Sister Jean. 54-51. Oregon State plus 6.5. I don't need it. Oregon State wins.
Straight up is your pick?
Yes.
Why ugly react like game. That's a surprising pick after I just said it, they're all coin flips?
54-51. Why not? It's a real conference. That Pac-12 I mentioned today on Fox Bet Live. It's like the whole conference was vaccinated. They got the Magic Johnson & Johnson shot, and that's it. They're ready.
Shout out to our mutual pal, Jeff Schwartz, who...
Yeah.
He's one of these weirdos who...
Yes.
He unironically... Well, he's just a weirdo, period.
Mm-hmm.
But he's one of these weirdos who roots for the entire conference. And
yeah.
I get it. Don't drop me a line. People hit me up on social media when I said it the first time. They go, oh, it's cool when the for our whole conference, it's cool to see blank mid-major advance. Like, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the bully conferences. If you're Ole Miss taking pride in Alabama, is just makes you a weirdo.
Oh, I hate it.
Makes you desperate for attention or for some to bask in some minor reflected glory. It has no positive reflection on you. In fact, you should be embarrassed that you're
That's
in the
exactly
same region of the
said.
Country. And for some reason, Nick Saban is so charismatic that he can out recruit you. You should be embarrassed to be in that conference and to be losing perennially to some of these teams.
So, I deal with it every day. Clay Travis, I mean, this is like 25th on the list of horrible things about him. But yes, he's like, hey, he's a Tennessee fan. He lives in Nashville, Tennessee, this, that. He went to Vanderbilt Law. Okay. All right, Tennessee or Vanderbilt. Those are your teams. We'll let you have two. LSU, oh, Joe Burrow. When Joe Burrow won the high, oh, look at this guy. Oh, look at this. Hey, right in my backyard. It's like, are you kidding me? Do Bonetta and I, do we get to root for anyone from New Mexico? Anyone who's 600 miles away? Is that how it goes?
No, Bonetta gets every NHL team.
Oh, yeah.
Up in Canada, I guess. I guess if the Browns or Ravens go to the Super Bowl this year, I can cheer for that.
I couldn't even imagine. You have to hate. You have to hate everybody else in the conference.
And this weird thing is the rationalization is because everybody's so plugged in the 21st century, the most casual of sports fans, super plugged in and concerned about the ratings. Oh, you know, ratings. Are down in blank league this year. I don't know what that's going to do. And oh, I'm worried about that being the finals. Well, that's going to get low rate. Don't worry about it. How about that?
Yeah.
Everybody worries spending about how much money NFL teams are spending. Again, ain't your cash. Just chill yourself out. Don't worry about these things.
I'm with you.
But those people will tell you, well, it's good for the conference because when they do well, then the whole conference gets a lot of money. Again, has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, exactly.
What are you talking about?
There's no relegation. This is not the Premier League, right? You're not. Vanderbilt's not going to drop out of the conference and you're not going to, it's fine.
You can it makes me crazy, teams. But yeah. So Schwartz is on an undefeated run. So good for him, I guess. Betting on those Pac-12 teams. But this is, all right, listen, you didn't ask me to be a curmudgeon, but I'm going to do it anyway for you. One, this is what I'm talking about. The entire season. How long's college basketball season been going? 4 months now, at least. Oregon State versus Loyola, that's a game. That's one of the last handfuls of games.
No, it's not one of the last handfuls of games. There's still two more weekends. You'll be fine.
I mean, the only reason anybody cares is because there's an old lady who sits there and everybody thinks it's funny to root for her. By the way, she's playing the Beavers, which I don't know.
I think that's a little ageist. I wouldn't call her old right off the bat.
Her and the Beavers hooking up.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
What I like about it is, I do like that we have three juicy, it only makes me pine for college football because we really do have three good New Year's Day bowl games lined up, Florida State and Michigan. And I think they've played each other pretty much every year in a bowl game. Probably 19 out of the last 20. It seems like they play on New Year's Day in a meaningless one. UCLA, Bama. It's a good early season, really. and then a juicy Pac-12 tilt, Oregon and USC. I think you're right, by the way. USC and UCLA, I wonder if in any other year in Los Angeles, if the citizenry would be more enthused, because both those teams are really, I mean, if not really talented.
Lots
really
of fun both, to watch.
This should be a great war.
USC
rivalry here.
Should be ashamed of themselves for having seven losses. I know I'm basing it on two games, but I watched them a little towards the end in the Pac-12 tournament and everything, but those Mobley brothers, nobody has an answer for them. I don't see why that line is. I thought they'd be a 5-point favorite over Oregon, but anyway, that's a two-point favorite.
I think you're right. I'm riding along with you on that one, and I'm surprised by UCLA. I think UCLA has a real shot of at least covering that. I'm going to go though. Again, pedigree snob and known entity in the March Madness tournament. I'm going with Nova.
Oh,
if it's against the spread +7, I really like it. But even straight up, it's not crazy to think that they can win this game given the way the tournament has flowed so far. Baylor 4-6 in their last 10 against the number. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously Jay Wright's done it before. That has to count for something. I mean, didn't seem like it counted for a great deal for any of the successful coaches who had past success going into this tournament. But nevertheless, there's something to be said. And also, Baylor, I mean, Nova kind of, they had a couple double-digit wins too, but these one seeds, just completely anecdotally, how many times has a team just annihilated everybody on their way to the Final Four? It doesn't happen very much. When you're the heavy favorite, it seems like you're going to get tested somewhere along the way. The trick is figuring out from a gambling perspective in which game that's going to come. I say it's Nova. I say Nova takes a good run at Baylor here. They're very similar teams if you watch them play. They're both, you know, defense-dominant kind of teams. So I guess by that logic, I'll also go under on this.
Interesting.
One, give me
all that. Right. That's Jay Wright. That missing Gillespie hasn't been a problem for them in the first two games. Although who was it against North Texas and
Winthrop?
I can't remember. And Winthrop. Those are their two wins. Here's one for you. Villanova in the Sweet 16 last five times, 4-1, point differential +9. Pretty good. One thing I will say though, those back in Bell are one seeds when facing five seeds. Last 25 times, 21-4. Now that's just just straight up. But you like the points here. So you like Nova +7. I'm going Oregon State +6.5.
And just for fun, if you're looking for something to make it interesting and you want to ride regionally, don't do the conference thing. But if you want to ride with the West Coast, I do like the two LA teams.
Yeah, it's a good time. It's a good time for
you
sure.
Made that call. And it was a good USC call to take UCLA beating up on. Who'd they play that? Oral? Was that their last?
No.
Oh, no, Oral, no. It was Abilene Christian. Yeah, right.
Yep. Yeah, that wasn't.
Shame them, but good.
That wasn't close. Actually, they were losing 7-6, and I was cursing on the set on the Fox lot. And then must have gone like on a 18-4 run or something like that. All right. You could do it all on FanDuel.com. The tournament is down to just 16 teams. You're watching from the sidelines now. Is your chance to get in on the action. I don't know what you've been waiting for. FanDuel Sportsbook hooking you up with exclusive 30-1 odds on all 16 teams left in the bracket. So if you want to take Villanova, you get 30-1 odds. If you want to take, this is just to win the next game. New users, 30-1 odds on any team to win their next game this round. Put $5 up, you get 150 back. Doesn't matter if you're going Arkansas over Oral Roberts, who's an 11-point favorite. You can get 30-1 odds on that bet or on the Villanova bet or on the Oregon State bet. As I mentioned, all you have to do is download FanDuel Sportsbook app, make your first deposit to unlock exclusive 30-1 odds and sign up with promo code Extra Points so they know we sent you. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code Extra Points. I was thinking about tournaments past. I know, Dave, you like it. I don't know if you ever like this. I mean, it's been kind of the same format. I guess your thing is that they stayed in school longer, which is the case for my five favorite tournament players that I've watched. I figured we'd go back and forth instead of listing five.
This is just pure favorite. We're not trying to match up.
Favorite to watch. I wouldn't even say best. No, and I didn't even think about it position wise where everybody's going to play. Although I think it bears out the way I have it laid out.
You know what wins out for me? The problem is my nerdity wins out ultimately over trying to be cute with
Let's
you
see.
About it. I should have tried to be cute with you, but I went with my actual favorite guys.
Oh, you did. Oh, is this going to be all Indiana players and Jerome Lane?
No, guys I liked in the tournament. But again, I like the tournament. I like, I watched Rambo 2 just last night on TV. I like that too. I also see that it's flawed. That's how I regard March Madness. I enjoy watching it. It's not that I miss even a second of it. I just am pointing to the fact that it's not the best way to evaluate who's the best team in the country.
You have hockey players playing the same team 18 days in a row.
Well, if nothing else, that's a test of who's good when you play the same over and over again.
I don't know.
Figure out who's actually good and who stinks.
Who beat the Sabres? Oh, you beat the Sabres by 6? Okay, we beat them by 9. Oh, well, who goes? I don't know. Let's play them again. Figure it out.
You want to cool your way out of a splendid year, a splendid season for a sports fan? You keep it up, but we're in a golden age here. Nathan MacKinnon and Connor McDavid and, of course, Harry's favorite, Leon Draisaitl, and, of course, 87 and the Reds. It's just
that can't be your
top five.
Sorry
you're missing it.
That can't be your top five in college basketball. There's got to be better. Start us off. Hit us with one.
I will go with somebody who, it's funny because we talked about him the other day, you and I, and then Ryan Clark was talking about him, the old Steeler safety, and he mentioned Chris Jackson. I love Chris Jackson, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. Remember when he scored 53 on Florida in 1988? Mm-hmm. And he said him, I said, well, if we're getting into that area, I got to go with my favorite, Kenny Anderson. No one more fun. I mean, couldn't shoot a lick when he was 18, but he was delightful in that shiny gold Georgia Tech getup. Boy, that was fun. Took over for Mark Price in that era. That was Georgia Tech, really good teams with Bobby Cremins for a long time there.
He was on my list too. 23. I don't know that he couldn't shoot. I don't know, but great slide. Really fun to watch. He looked like he was like 128 pounds, right?
That's right.
I think he had like 23 points per game. And growing up in New York, he went to Archbishop Molloy, tough part of town in Queens. So we knew of him coming in. They made the Sweet 16 twice, I think, right? And UNLV beat them by 9 when they were the best team, when they rolled Duke that year, right? Was that 89-90? They
beat Georgia Tech by 9. That sounds right, because I feel like they got Kansas one year mixed in there somewhere. But yeah, I mean, Kenny Anderson, you hit the nail on the head. I don't think, although you did see those guys on Abilene Christian, but that team set aside. I mean, you're right. He looked like he was 120 pounds. And he was all just slash and everything. But yeah, he scored, but it was all getting to the rim. And he was a little guy. So it was fascinating to watch him. I loved watching him. How say you?
He was really great. No, I'm an idiot. Yeah, no, they made the Final Four. That's who they lost to. They lost to UNLV in the Final Four that year. That was
in
a really 90? Good team. Yes, in 90. That I think that was the only team they really could have lost to. They lost to them 90-81, and then UNLV just trucks Duke by 30 in the finals, and then
that
Duke
was
gets
the all-time
back.
Just I this yeah. is cr- I don't have the
was that your freshman year of college happening. Or was that your sophomore year?
I remember that's exactly right. I remember watching in a fraternity house. That's exactly right.
So that was a Kenny Anderson team. Right, I think they made the Sweet 16 his freshman year, and then the second year they made it to the Final Four. They beat Minnesota to get there. It was a close game, and then they got beat up by UNLV, the eventual champs. But and then didn't he marry someone on the Real World?
Yeah, that sounds yes he did. Yeah, right.
Jim Cunningham, you would remember this. I don't
That's
know why,
definitely
but you would
right.
definitely remember, right?
Yeah, it's true. Yep. The, I think her name may have been Tammy. I'm not sure.
From
the Real World LA.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, Real
right.
World LA.
Yeah, that was the one. That I don't think that lasted, but I think they had a child. All right, so we each have the same one, or not, we're not really ranking them. Give us another one, Dave.
I don't know if I want to get into the Wayback Machine here, but I will. We talked about the NC State upset of Houston as one of the three or four biggest moments in tournament history. Derek Wittenberg and Sidney Lowe. Sidney Lowe deserves a shout out because he had a big, big butt. He was fat and he played point guard, and that was in our lifetime. And so that was funny to look at. But Derek Wittenberg also, he had a sizable tuchus, but he could shoot it as well. And the whole offense for NC State against Phi Slamma Jamma, who had him on the inside, easily whipped. That whole tournament was about Derek Wittenberg shooting the ball from 20 plus feet. The issue was there was no such thing as a three-pointer in college basketball. So when you look back at the games,
right,
especially that title game, you're like, what the hell? This is how you beat a team? It's just right. Like same thing with Harold Jensen in 1985 for Villanova against Georgia. Like, this is the strategy to just make 20 footers and they only count the same as a layup.
Yeah.
And it works. Weird, but it did work for them. But of course, his most famous shot was the air ball that Lo Charles caught at the rim and then dunked. And then Jimmy V did his dance running around the floor.
That's a good one. All right. We'll stay in the sizable tookus department and I will go with big country Bryant Reeves, right? From Oklahoma State. Actually grew up in Oklahoma, got the nickname Big Country because when he was on the flight first time, it had to be in college, he pointed out that this is a big country. He couldn't believe they had a game on the East Coast. He was 300 pounds, 7 feet tall, ended up playing in the NBA for Vancouver for 7 years. That's like, or 6 years. That's unsatisfying, right? 6 years in Vancouver. Don't play with any other team. But Oklahoma
he was before Nikola Jokic, there was Greg Ostertag. And before Ostertag, there was this character.
Yeah, I think he was even bigger, like big 300 pounds. Like, I don't know. It wasn't fat, but he was something to watch.
Yeah, and again, he just never lifted a weight.
They lost in 95 Oklahoma State to UCLA, who beat Arkansas. So, and they might have been the second best team that year. He can only take them so far, though. I'm going big country Bryant Reeves as my second. All right, Dave?
I mean, I could go with any now that you bring up UNLV. You know, that team was a fascinating watch, obviously, for any number of reasons. You knew while you were watching them, like, this can't be on the up and up, can it? And, of course, it wasn't. And the Fab Five was neat to watch and all of those. I guess the single best run, as we've talked about, I like underdogs. Underdogs are fun stories. They're easy to grasp as somebody watching on TV. You see yourself in them, and that's nice. The greatest thing in sports, in my book, is when everybody watching the game on TV, in the stadium, on the bench, on both benches, is like, the way that team wins is if that guy does it for them. That's the only way they can get it done. That's what Danny Manning did. In 1988, he dragged that Kansas Jayhawks team. They were relatively good. I think they were a 3 seed, if I remember. I'm still bummed about that because I really do think Pitt would have beaten them had they not lost to Vanderbilt in the second round. But anyway, Danny Manning just dragged that Kansas team, and he punctuated it by beating a really high-end Oklahoma team who's a natural rival of theirs from the old Big 8 days. And Manning didn't exactly succeed in the NBA the way he did because he was in that moment. It was like, well, Danny Manning's going to rule the NBA for the next decade, right? That didn't exactly happen, but he did rule that March.
Yeah. All right. I will go to a team. Well, you're not going to like this, but I was a big Christian Laettner fan. And I really think it's because
that's perfect for you. Love that.
But there's something to it because I might have been in a hole gambling wise that I really may not have ever gotten out of if not for Duke Blue Devils in that, what was it, 89-90? They lost to UNLV. They got crushed.
Right.
And then they beat them the following year. And on their way to beating them, they beat Kansas. And Laettner had to like hit every free throw. I think it was like 11 for 11 for them to cover that. I loved all of it. I loved them stepping on the players, everything. I know people hated them. I know there was a whole 30 for 30 for it, but I can't say I didn't enjoy watching Christian Laettner. He'll be my third. Oh, my God.
The hay he must have made on that Duke campus at the height of his powers.
Coach K didn't let them fornicate with the
Was that true? I didn't know.
Yes,
I did not know that.
No, back then that wasn't.
If memory serves, I asked him about that, if he was a great coxman in his college days.
Laettner?
I
think
Yeah. And I believe he confirmed that he was. okay. But I'm not sure. I guess who would say no?
Just say yes. What could happen?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, though of course he was disgusting. He was loathsome, and then J.J. Redick came along, and he outdid it. Thank goodness for J.J. Redick.
I love that team. Hurley, Laettner, that was so much
for
fun.
You that you would like Grant Hill, just a mixer. Really good. Nobody could like that Duke team. They were so grotesque, and Anyway, all right, fine.
You can. I'm telling you, bet Duke, bet the Patriots. You have a new appreciation for these. Not anymore. Bet the Patriots, but that was one.
You
way
know why
hate
you like him is because now that he's out of college basketball, your bet that no buzzer beaters.
Oh yeah,
is good because you could straight up no Christian Laettner buzzer beaters.
That's
you would
true.
Probably have gotten worse odds on just Christian Laettner against the field base because everything he did was a buzzer.
That's true.
He shot him exactly. into the Final Four twice in his freshman and his senior years. He shot Duke into the Final Four on a buzzer beater.
You're
That's
right.
crazy.
Well, to be fair though, the buzzer beater bet is only for the first round. So it's only for
right.
What,
I know
typically,
that's your bet, but
typically
right.
Thursday, Friday. But
the best.
All right, give us
I'll go here. I did not go to Indiana University at this time. I didn't like Syracuse though because I was a Big East fan and I'm not a weirdo and I didn't root for my conference just because they had teams that made the Final Four. I didn't like Syracuse with Derek Coleman and Ronnie Cicely and company. So I wanted the Hoosiers to win, and they were down one with 6 seconds, then five, then Daryl Thomas, they pitch it down to him in the blocks and he was completely inept. He's passed away, so I don't want to disparage him, but they pitch it to him down in the blocks. And of course, I remember thinking, no rooting interest, like, oh, this is bad. That guy can't shoot the ball. And he pitched it back out to Keith Smart, himself a junior college transfer. He pulls the trigger as he falls into the baseline, falling not away, but into the baseline, and he swishes it with 4 seconds to go to vanquish Syracuse. Keith Smart, that was great. And then Daryl Thomas in the post game, he's like, maybe you could find this, Joel. He's like, I got the ball, and I gave it back out to Smart, and it was bucket. It was bucket. I just love the post game Daryl Thomas. It was bucket. So it was bucket.
It was bucket. All right, that's a good, obviously a famous one. Great shot. I'll tell you what, I will go. I got two more. Well, one of them's easy because it's where I grew up. But Bo Kimble ended up playing for the Knicks. Remember that Loyola Marymount team? Now, think about a team like that getting like coverage on CBS on a regular Sunday or Saturday. They did it. They were so electrifying. Him and Hank Gathers that first year. Obviously, Gathers collapses. And then the whole second year becomes a tribute to him. 89-90, they do a run to the Elite Eight with Kimble no Gathers. Beat Michigan 149-115. Once in a while, it was great to see those games, right?
Because Michigan was good, too.
Yeah, they were damn good. Imagine 149 points. Like, I remember watching that. And then they lost to UNLV 131-101. These games were insane. And again, UNLV was the best team that year. So who knows how far they could have gone. But Kimble, as a tribute, shoots the ball lefty, right? Free throw, swishes it. Good job by him. I'm going Bo Kimble. He was fun.
That was very fun. I like that that little tournament run there. Yeah, now a lot of memories are popping into
my head.
Are you
getting
emotional? Andrew Gaze was
Remember
Seton Hall? They had the Australian man who was 30, who was 39 years of age, shooting threes, and like, wait, he's Australian? Like, what's he doing at Seton Hall during the week? Does he go to class or anything? And he helped carry them to the Final Four. And then Ramil Robinson. That's funny as we think about that. We cited our favorite moments. We somehow combined to leave that one off. That was weird. Ramil Robinson steps to the line with 3 seconds left in the national title game, down one, and he knocks down both free throws.
Yeah.
That was something. That was 89, like I say. I'll go with here's a deep dive, but people of a certain age always know who I'm talking about when I bring him up. Michael Graham from the Georgetown Hoyas, the bald guy, another guy who looked like he was about 37 years old. He would have played a bad guy in like Spencer for Hire or some 80s terrible action series. But he was a bad dude for about 3 weeks of his life. And then he just vanished. Mm-hmm. He was a key factor, maybe even more so than Patrick Ewing. The whole thing going into Georgetown and Houston and that Final Four was about Akeem versus Ewing and you know, who's going to get over the hump finally is one of these two, collegiate dynasties going to get over. But this Michael Graham was like a 6'10", 6'11 guy who was more nimble than you were used to seeing guys at that size being, and he could throw it down and he was shaved, bald head, and they just vanished. They win the national title and then that was the end of it.
Well, that's kind of the cool thing about college basketball, right? It doesn't always play out that if you're great in college, you're gonna make one of these rosters. But as long as you're bringing up 85 and that Georgetown team, I have to bring up my favorite, Chris Mullin. They lost to Georgetown in the Big East tournament, the championship game. I think they lost by a dozen, like 92-80 or something. And then they lose to him again in the Final Four. And they just could not beat him. There was just nothing they could do to beat this team. Imagine if you're St. John's, you beat NC State, you make the Final Four. All right, we're playing Georgetown again. Let's just get it. Let's just do it. No, they couldn't get it done. And they lost. I think they lost that game by even worse. I think they lost by close to 20 in that Final Four game.
In the Final Four.
They were both one seeds. Were both one seeds, which was rare back then that a conference would have 2-1 seeds. I mean, it's kind of rare now. It doesn't happen a ton now, but yes, I'm looking now. 77-59, they lost. Imagine you're St. John's, like, all right, there's this monster Georgetown team. Let's just hope they get knocked off somewhere down the road so we don't have to face them. Oh, not only that, they have to face them in the Final Four, and they lose by 18, and then that's the year, of course, Georgetown loses to Villanova. But, yeah.
I could do this for another 3 hours, but I'm just thinking about those. I wonder, was the Big East in the 80s pro or college? The eras of certain conferences, that I would put that on the short list for like the most high-end teams. And it's weird to think about because Georgetown then vanquishes, like we say, the Houston Cougars with Akeem and Clyde the Glide. No, I'm sorry. Glide wasn't on that team. He was on the 83 team. I think Glide left after 83, I'm pretty sure. But either way, those are two, not just Hall of Fame guys. Those are, Keem's maybe the best center, and to make a case for that. And Clyde the Glide didn't get over the hump because of Michael Jordan, but those Blazers teams were great too. How many teams had two guys at that level who went on to become Hall of Famers that never drank from the winning cup in college? Worthy, Jordan.
Worthy and Jordan, right?
They did get over. I guess the Fab Five, but no, really only Weber's the Hall of Famer.
Right, not all of Howard's not going to be Hall of Fame. I don't know. Joel, can you think of any? That's good.
I don't know. It's a random question. I'm just thinking that when we think about these Titanic teams that get knocked off somewhere along the way, and it's a stunner, I don't know that there was ever a team better than Houston that didn't win a title.
Yeah. That's interesting. Wow, that was fun. All right, let's never do that again. No, that was fun. No, I got to tell you, Joel.
That's fun for anybody but us. But
Joel brought that up. I was like, I think it's going to take too long. And I was right. No, I think it wasn't that bad. It was pretty good. How about this? This is Brian Scalabrine. Some high school kid challenges him to a game. He's watching Scalabrine work out. He challenges him to a game. And of course, everything's caught on film now. Everybody puts their iPhone out and make captions and everything. And Scalabrine's annoyed, you could tell, right? And he's like, oh, what are you just going to try to tire me out? And that didn't really factor in. Goes out there, he beats the punk 11-0. 11-0 for Scalabrine. Our own Kendrick Perkins giving praise to Scalabrine. This is what you do. I'm happy about the result, right? I would feel sad for a pro, any pro, within the last 15 years to get beat by a high school kid that may or may not be going anywhere, right? Unless the high school kid ends up being like Allen Iverson or something, 11-0 has to be pretty damn satisfying for Brian Scalabrine.
Yeah, I'm one of these people. I guess I'm what would be called a visual kind of a person. Mm-hmm. You're numbers oriented more so. I find a certain order and a certain satisfaction that Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston found each other. And then Angelina Jolie found Brad Pitt. That makes sense to me. Like
we didn't even bring that up.
But if that doesn't happen, then this is when I can get crazy. When it's like, wait, Aniston's with that schnook? Like, well, then maybe I have a chance. And then this makes my mind wander then things get sideways. I need structure. I need rules.
You need a therapist, I think. Why? What is your point? You get annoyed?
I like order. Yes, of course. I want an NBA guy annihilating some bum. I don't want to do that. Start opening that can of worms. I don't know where it ends, Sal. I don't want anything to do with it. Now, that can of worms is open because I contend that if you gave me 4 throws from the 10-yard line, and if you gave me like half the field to do it, or like from the hash out or to the sideline, if you gave me an NFL receiver and put him up against an NFL defensive back, I could throw a touchdown pass to him. Do you think I could do that or no?
Okay. I don't know. I don't know.
I've said this.
I'm shocked that you made this about you. I was trying to figure out what we think about.
I'm telling you something. I said, yeah. Nate Burleson and Ike Taylor. Ike Taylor, I've shamed him. The Scalabrine dumped that guy. I beat Ike Taylor in a free throw shooting contest. Mm. He's a professional athlete, by the way.
Right.
One. Two, I've said I could, and Nate Burleson said he'll do this. I said, you line up, and Ike's, no way, Sheck. You couldn't do it, Sheck. Well, guess what? I would do it. I'd put the ball on Nate Burleson, just a matter of if he holds on to it. Now, Scalabrine.
I mean, I feel like an asshole going back to my original premise here. Sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Damashek. But what do you think, what was satisfying for Scalabrine? Does he have a number in mind? 11-0, obviously satisfying. You can't get better than that. 11-3?
No. If you play, if Scalabrine's 6'9 or 6'10.
Yeah. I mean,
Scalabrine's standard should have been if more than one or two shots touch the rim, I have failed.
Really?
Like that.
FanDuel had Scalabrine -8.5. In a game to 11.
You should be able to reject some boob anytime you want to.
Every single time.
Yeah. Get a shot off, for goodness sakes. And if you're under 6'7" and in the NBA, then you should be able to swipe the ball away before he can even dribble it once. I mean, that's
all right.
So way better.
What do you think he would have been bummed at? If it was 11-3, you think he would have walked away bummed?
I think he would have been rightly devastated.
Really? Wow.
But you know what though? Here's the one thing I will say about it is, you know Jimmy Kimmel, the host of the late night show.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure this is true. He says, I've never asked Shaq, so I don't know. But Jimmy once did throw a silly
video.
Just jagging around, threw a sky hook from about like 18 feet, and it did bank in. And he's like, Shaq was trying on that. And I'm like, oh, was he trying though? And he's like, he was definitely trying. And you can ask him if he was trying.
Trying to what? To block it?
Yeah, trying to stop him.
No, he took a break defensively. Here's the thing. He said, you score a point on me, I'll come on
your show.
Is
that what it was?
You score a point on me, I'll come on your show buck naked. And Jimmy's like, all right. And I think it was really the first take. And Shaq just didn't feel like getting in his face every year. And he just did a skyhook from way out. And it hit, probably from like 16 feet out. We should try to get video of that. But
Bring back pros versus Joes and let's do it all.
Yeah, that was fun.
I mean, the one that I find interesting is the most basic. Getting a ring with Mike Tyson, I guess, is the most basic. Do you think you could avoid him for 3 minutes?
Tyson. What, on a football field?
What if I gave you $6 million? Would you box him, prime Mike Tyson for one round?
But here's the thing: what do I do? Can I just go down right away? I mean, he can kill me.
No,
he literally kill me with a stiff uppercut to my big fat guy.
I always wonder about that physiologically.
To worry. Don't wonder about it. It's true.
You would die.
Yeah, I think if your midsection and core isn't trained, you could really be in bad shape.
Is that true? So I don't know the actual answer to this. I've always wondered about that because people say, you would literally die. You would literally get killed. Like, then how come he hasn't killed anybody in the ring yet?
Guys have died. You just fall the wrong way on your face, your brain. Joel, you want to say something?
Think I would be dead? If I fought 1986 Mike Tyson, the result would be death.
I mean, you could jump off a two-story building.
I don't know.
I would
a lot for $6 million. If I knew I was going to survive, I would do it because then I would live a nice life.
I hope your parents aren't listening to this episode.
Dave, there are two kinds of people growing up. If you watch a movie like Mike or Rookie of the Year, there's some people that believe, I could put on Michael Jordan's shoes and be a basketball player. Or maybe my arm tweaks a funny way, I could pitch in the major leagues. Those people are like you, and then there's people that believe in reality that won't happen. You're not completing a pass against a cornerback, and you're not scoring on Shaquille. Ask Sal. Sal was tackled. Sal was tackled by James Harrison in, for a sketch, and he didn't move for 2 weeks.
Ah, he's soft.
But he wasn't trying to get away from him either, to be fair. Sal just stood there.
Sal, could you even have thrown a pass in the 2 seconds that James Harrison came at you?
It wouldn't have been good. It would have been rushed and everything, and I would have had to handle the snap perfectly and getting the laces aligned and all that stuff that I wasn't used
to. Don't believe it. These guys want to scare you. That's their big thing. Like, Shaq, if you ever did it, you would get killed. Just on the snap. The snap. You would get literally crushed.
It hurts a lot.
As soon as this ball was snapped, you would get crushed. I'm like, why would I get crushed?
Dave,
like,
when Duck Drew Hodges
Brees doesn't get crushed. Why would Duck, I get I would just die right on the field on my first football snap.
Duck Hodges was Duck Hodges played quarterback for our team.
Yes, he did. That's a perfect example. Duck Hodges survived.
He barely survived and completed a few passes. So That's the
point. Bro, are you going to say you're going to die? No. Are you going to spend time in the hospital? Probably. Probably.
All right. Not. I mean, I think Joel just made my case for me by bringing up Duck Hodges. He threw touchdown passes in the NFL. Multiple. I wouldn't be able to throw one with four tries. Come on.
I think Joel just scored more points with Eddie Spaghetti.
The other one, well, yeah, consider it a split decision from the minus three gang at this point. Spaghetti voted in the affirmative for you, so you got that going, Joel.
Sure.
I mean, the other one is, my favorite one is, 100 pitched balls. Could you, with a major league, eight guys behind the pitcher, could you, 100 pitched balls, get a hit, and I'm willing to even mess with the standard. You're a good athlete. You can swing a bat, Sal. I've seen you swing a bat. You're not somebody who overdoes it and tries to hit a home run in softball. You take it the opposite direction and take a nice little single. Could you do that?
I'll even give
you this. They're all going to be strikes.
No,
he's not going to dust you back or anything like that. They're all 100.
Am I going in right now, or do I get like 3 weeks to train and go to a pitching machine to go to 60, 70, 80? I still don't think I could do it. There's too much movement on these balls. Corolla would be in your side, your camp. He thinks he could.
I don't think I could. I know, really? I couldn't get a hit. I think that the force of the pitch would knock the bat out of my hand to the degree that I wouldn't be able to clear the infield.
So I could, if everyone played where they normally played, I think I could lay a bunt down for a single.
Ooh,
I think that
would be fun.
Out of 100, I think I might be able to. I'd get lucky there. And just
you'd have
take
to
off.
Commit to the bunt, though, because you wouldn't do it on your first. That ball would be coming in so fast. You could actually lay down an effective bunt.
Well, that I think I'd be able to, by the 50th pitch, I'd be able to maybe have some kind of semblance of like where I am and where I should put the bat.
I like now you're Lee Mazzilli-ing it. You're fake the bunt, but then at the last second, you're going to choke it up and hit it right through.
So you can hit a major league pitcher, but you would knock out Tyson in 3 minutes.
I didn't say such a thing at all. I said nothing. And I didn't say I would even do it. But of course, then it's scout's honor if you're doing it, because you can't just like take a dive. You have to try your best to stay on your feet.
Yeah. Yeah, I had who punched me in a. What did I do? I lost a bet to Bennett, I think. It was punch or punch. It was some kind of was it basketball? I forgot what. I bet against her Raptors or something, and she won. And it was a punch or punch. And if she lost, she was going to have Hawaiian punch poured over her head. And if I lost, some athlete was going to hit me. And bam, boom, boom, Mancini came in and punched me in the gut. And he gave me
all the people to do it is boom, boom, Mancini.
We try to get, who do we try? We try to get a bunch of people, and boom, boom, jumped at the opportunity. But he
seems a little bit weird, but okay.
I know, I get it. I understand. I had to hold back on saying a few things, but he was like, if I go, he's like, what percent are we doing here? I'm like, 50. He's like, no, you want 20. I was like, really? And he gave it to me. And after, I did not want 20. I definitely didn't want 50. Yeah. I didn't want 20.
And what did he fight at? Like 130?
Yeah. And he's probably still that. He's probably
there
still
guys,
like 145.
I mean, but the lightest is what? Featherweight, flyweight, whatever it is?
Yeah.
Like what are those? 115, 120?
Phantom weight. Yeah, sure.
Could that guy, for real?
Yes.
Look at me. He would annihilate me.
Are you talking one punch, or are you talking if he peppers you?
I'm talking
you
about I'm talking about I have to go around with this guy.
Yeah, you take 15 shots to the head before you.
How long would I be able to survive against a guy who's 150?
You go down.
Pounds?
You would want to. You want to open your eyes eventually. So probably 10 or 15 seconds.
How would he even reach me? He'd have to work the body, my ample body. That's what I've been working on this for.
He's been waiting for this bout all my life.
Right.
This is stupid. And you know what else is stupid? Joe Flacco signing with the Eagles. I think, unless he wins a Super Bowl, and then you're going to say he should be a Hall of Famer. But this makes me think they're definitely going to take a quarterback in the draft. What does it make you
think? Oh, it does, huh?
I think so.
I feel like it's the opposite. I mean, really? I guess they certainly could, but
oh,
no.
They're not done. I don't know. I think this was just a... So they're 5-1 to win the NFC East. We went over Spaghetti's team plus 460, making all the moves in the world. Dallas still favored at plus 105. Sure they are. They have the best quarterback, the most established. And then Washington is at plus 280. Yeah, Joe Flacco's not going to move the needle on the Eagles at 5-1. But again, I think they're in the mix for a quarterback in those, you know, the first half of the draft.
We did really have a good minus three with Mike Tannenbaum and, you know, Jets talk. And he's really down on Roethlisberger. My goodness.
I know.
Bottom five team in the NFL. He says, it's over, Dave. It's over. When it ends, it falls off a cliff. I've said that forever.
I think he's right for the most part. I think that's true. When you fall, I think the Steelers are an anomaly, though. They don't finish worse than 8-8, no matter who their quarterback is. Big Ben, I pointed out to you, he had his top three statistical seasons of all time, as awkward as it was, the first 3 months good. Last month was weird, and then the last game or two, he stepped it up. But I don't think you're in as much trouble. And I also don't agree necessarily with Juju going to the Ravens would have been the worst thing. I think that,
oh, you don't, huh?
Well, I don't know what kind of – I don't know what receiver you give Lamar Jackson to make that team great. Does it necessarily translate that he's going to be in sync with any receiver? I almost feel like if Michael Thomas went there, he wouldn't have as good numbers as he had with New Orleans.
I think that's true. And the Ravens organization would have whispered that 2 years ago. Like, we understand that the virtue is doing it this way. We probably don't go any worse than 7-9, but they stated they would talk about like, what's our high end? I think they were a little surprised by 14-2, I guess a couple of years ago. But at this point, it's for real that it's going to be mounting pressure. If they're, you know, 2-3 games back of Cleveland and Pittsburgh is maybe ahead of them, and it's halfway through the season, that the pressure on Lamar Jackson and how long are we going to continue to do this is going to keep going. It's not to say that it's not going to succeed in 2021, but I don't know. The defense has caught up a little bit with it last year, right? And he's got to be at this point kind of feeling a little bit of pressure individually. And I don't think they're going to sign him before the year. And so if they don't sign him before the season, anyway, we've gotten very far afield.
Well, let me bring us back, because I could do this. I'm constantly looking for ways to bring us back. Now, if you had your choice, I think I know what your answer is going to be. They're about the same number on FanDuel. Ravens to win the division plus 110. Cowboys to win the division plus 105. You have to make one of those bets. You're going Dallas, right? Well, because you like Cleveland. I mean,
I like Cleveland more than I like Baltimore, and I like Pittsburgh right now. I know I'm in the vast minority on that one, but I just don't see the sky falling the way everybody else does.
Now, Pittsburgh is the same odds to win the division as Washington is.
Right.
Which one do you take there?
I think you're right. And the reason I brought up Tannenbaum and Rosenthal, they shot down the idea of the Eagles taking a QB at 6. It seems like they need to look at the QB market.
Yeah.
I push more than anybody. You can always get a quarterback in the next draft. Not this next year though. Like the kid from UNC and then some questions after that. This is a rich draft and there's some interesting names out there in free agency. And Jalen Hurts, you're going to roll with that? I just don't like as a mentality, like, let's see. Let's spend the season to see. We used a second on him after all. Don't we owe it to him? No, you're a pro football team. Get Justin Fields or Trey Lance if you could. Do you think Jalen Hurts at his high end is a difference maker in championship game level and Super Bowl level? That's the assessment of a quarterback at this stage. If he ain't that, then what are you evaluating him for? If he can be mediocre, like what's to see? You know he's not going to be, 2 years from now, like, hey, Jalen Hurts, got to say, one of the five or six best in the biz. That's just not going to happen, and you know it.
Yeah. So,
go for somebody who will. Yeah, I like the Cowboys in that one. Washington is interesting. They've made some fun moves. They have a progressive kind of an offense. We know about their front four. And it's fun, Fitz Magic, at least. But he does the thing that
he'll
is
be
sad
the Cowboys
about.
Once, yeah, at least once.
He always, the more reps you give him, the more he eventually screws up. There's no evidence for all the fun and the beard and he's zany and he went to Harvard and everything. There's no evidence that starting him for an entire NFL season leads to the playoffs.
Well, what's weird with him is a lot of quarterbacks, most quarterbacks, they screw up in week six and then you don't want to see him the rest of the year. He seems to come alive in spurts and will maybe reignite you in week 15 through 17, right? But then as a starter, it's tough with him. But you know what? Back to the Eagles. You know what we are missing? Like, you and I watch the Eagles. We watch Jalen Hurts. We know he's not the answer. I think most people would say he's not the answer. You know what we don't know in terms of why or if they will draft a quarterback at number six? A lot of time, and this sounds stupid, but it's the ego of the general managers. What if the assistant general manager for the Eagles said, don't take Jalen Hurts. Don't do it. And then the GM says, now we're taking him, right? Was it Lurie's the owner, right?
Lurie's the owner. Yeah. Roseman's the GM.
Yes. And what if the GM is like, no, we're taking Hurts. And now he's got this in the back of his mind, like, ah, shit, the assistant GM's like, I got to prove him wrong. I know we should take a quarterback, but no. I know for a fact that's how it goes down, at least for my team, at least for a certain period of time. There are some really arrogant moves made to spite themselves, to spite the team. And even though it's a glaring deficiency, you're not going to address it because someone around you said you should have addressed it last year or you shouldn't have and you did or something like that. I'm telling you, that plays into it a lot and it really shouldn't, but it does.
There is no doubt. Hmm. And especially in Philadelphia and New York City and Boston to a degree, and much to my chagrin, Pittsburgh is starting to turn into one of these hot take Northeast sports towns too, where nothing is ever good enough. And hey, Philly ain't for everybody. It's a tough sports town. The media is tough and the fans are tough on you. Great. Good for you. Boo your own players and shake their confidence and chase them out of town. That's a great strategy. But who can argue with the outsized success you've had as a sports town, Philadelphia? I guess you barely have snuck through with the Eagles and Phillies here and there, and the Flyers haven't won a Stanley Cup since 1975. Roseman, the reason that they don't take a QB is because he already screwed up with Wentz. And that's the funny dynamic local media and fans and everything. Like, you understand the paradox that you're floating out here. Like, you guys think that blank quarterback is the answer? Like, that's, you guys are so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
No, you need to take a, so wait. So the guys who you boo and you're upset with for their personnel decisions, those are the guys who you are demanding make good personnel decisions going forward. Like, we didn't like that you took Carson Wentz, but now you're going to take a quarterback. We will like that. The math doesn't work out. It's all screwy, but you're absolutely right about ego.
That's
not
it.
Not just quarterbacks. Bill Belichick's success, guys will tell you who played with that Patriots team, it's all based around, the offensive coordinator and the fancy quarterback on the other team, their egos are too big, and they will try at some point to make a play that they can't, that Peyton Manning will try to force a ball in there that he can't, and we will intercept it, and that will be the difference. That will be the margin of victory, that an offensive coordinator's ego will have to make something special happen here, and that's when we will cash in. That's what happens at the GM level, too.
I mean, it's the opposite of we have to win this year. I'm going balls out. I'm doing whatever we can. It's the opposite of that. It's like, no, I'm going to take my time, and especially since everybody told me not to make the move last year, I have to stick to it.
Well, that's not ego. That's job preservation.
Yeah, right.
If you can reboot a little bit. A new head coach, he successfully has done it now. He's chased off the coach, chased off the quarterback, and now it's like, well, we're in rebuild mode. What do you want me to do, Philly? Like, so now Howie Roseman has gotten at least another year, and if anything looks positive by December, then he gets another year after that too. Whereas I think he got fairly close to getting kicked out of the building, right?
Yeah.
It's weird, by the way, Doug Peterson got fired. He just won the Super Bowl. It is weird how fast these things move.
And they got fired. They told him. They told him he was fine. They told him he was fine, which is maybe why he took Hurts out of the game.
But Nate Sudsfeld in.
Yeah. Joe Flacco, this is not FanDuel. This is me talking. Sal Sportsbook. Over under 3.5 touchdown passes this year.
Oh, wow. You really?
Well, I don't know. Is that
Jalen Hurts? Okay. So you ask good questions that I think, well, that's a silly question. And I think about
it. Why is it silly right off the bat? It's silly. You want to go under right off the bat or over?
Immediately. I go zero. Joe Flacco.
Okay.
37 years of age. He was broken down the last couple of years.
I guess I'm counting.
He was never that good.
I guess if I say 3.5, I'm counting two starts.
Well, you're also assuming that then that goes against you, because why would Joe Flacco ever get in a game if they draft a QB?
Right. But two games he plays.
All right. I mean, I'm going under on that.
You're
going
to go under.
Put that one in the time capsule and we'll dig it up on New Year's Day.
Joel, you got that? What do you mean six last year, Joe? Oh, yeah, I guess he did play. Yeah.
Six touchdowns last year.
Well, that makes sense, though. Three interceptions. Play for that team.
Yeah, we got to do a deep dive, but we got to get Joel in on it, because Joel, before we started spinning, he is with Mike Tannenbaum. I didn't know. He's Squirrel Hill's own. Joel is down on the black and gold.
We got time to figure it out. I think there's going to be a lot of shakeup there. You'll be happy with the draft.
You, it's the dogs playing poker. That would have looked silly. Mm. If you looked at it a third of the way in and it was just dogs sitting at a table, you would have thought, that's dumb. What are they sitting at a table? They're dogs. They can't sit at a table. Oh, now they painted it in the cards and the chips. And it's like, now this makes sense. Same thing with where the Steelers are in late March. Just listen, it's just the dogs right now. They're gonna fill in the cards and everything make sense. Else.
You've never seen dogs playing poker except in a paint.
Right. It was crazy, but then it made sense when it was all done. Like, oh, they're just playing some poker. That's why they're sitting at the table.
I don't think it makes sense.
You see, after the draft, that's where we'll be.
Hey, how about this? How about this Tim Peel thing? Referee, 53 years old. How many years in the league? 21. He was gonna retire at the end of the year.
What the hell, though?
He was going to retire.
Real, what the hell?
And he has an open mic. And he says, it wasn't much, but I wanted to get an effing penalty against Nashville early. So he's basically saying what we know is true in all sports. He pulled a makeup call to get back at Nashville, except you can't say that on open mic, although fire you. And so they did. I mean, he was supposed to retire at the end of the year. He's been in the league forever, and that's that for Tim
Peel. I mean,
Peel.
It is funny, because if you've watched for any amount of time, and you were watching your Islanders back in the 80s, it is a different standard with hockey than it is, say, baseball. Like, it's a strike or it's not. And, you know, maybe they give a little edge to Greg Maddux because he can really paint those corners, but it's basically a strike is a strike, no matter who's throwing it, no matter who's standing at the plate. The hockey rules about, like, oh, well, you swallow your whistle. It's deep enough into the game now where it wouldn't be right to call a penalty. Like, that kind of stuff is really, when you think about it, I can't decide. The bottom line is, I don't know if I love it or if I hate it, because I do kind of like Michael Jordan getting calls. Don't you? Don't you like that? Like, yeah, but he's Jordan. You can't do that to him.
Really? Whereas depends where my money is. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I guess the bottom line. But it is crazy that they got him literally. What would you open your yap for if you're a referee?
Yeah, you're always open, right? You always have the
context of that. Who's he talking to? Like, why would you even make a statement like that while you're working as a referee, just for fear that somebody would hear
it? When you have the, when you make the announcement, much like a, I don't know how it is with football officials. They have to press a button to be heard, right? We see it all the time.
Yeah, right.
When they announce the penalty, with hockey now, it seems like they just get close to a mic by the right. Or do they also? Press
oh, he
a
must.
Button
that's right. He must have skated over to the scorekeeper on the mic there.
That's what I'm saying. It seems like they're always able to pick it up. So why? And especially after 22 years, 1,334 games, would you think it was safe to say something like that?
So my dumb. God. So dumb. And it's funny. Well, now they have two referees on the ice and it only used to be one, and how it was implausible that a single set of eyeballs could track everything that was happening on the ice at any given time. And yet that was acceptable for decades on end in the NHL. Yeah. Bizarre. And it is, people always say like, well, who cares about gambling? If Pete Rose bet on gambling, what, who cares about Paul Hornig bet on a game and everything? I get why leagues understand that if there is any sense of shenanigans,
that
cripples the league worse than, like, it's like on a human scale, obviously assaults are worse than gambling, but I do get where leagues are coming from. I've told you the story about Hockley. When I was at Soldier Field once and he walked by me and I took a dollar bill out between my fingers. I was like, hey, ref, let's make sure the home team has a good day. Boy, he got into me, but good for that one.
Really, you apologize.
That is not a joke. And that's who are you with? Who are you with?
These guys are scared.
I'm with the NFL.
You ever heard of them? They're scared shitless for sure. And they were probably wondering if you had a microphone, right? Or you were recording the conversation.
I wonder what the, well, of I mean, course. I was there with a camera crew. What the hell did he think I was doing?
He knows the NFL. Would you put it past the NFL to test these guys? Like to actually
Boy, that's a great theory.
Did you ever see Taxi? You were a fan of Taxi, right?
I liked it.
You ever hear when, Jim Mignatowski, Christopher Lloyd, he opens up a bar and he gets caught and they want to shut him down and he can't catch a break and everyone goes out to support him. And then like the health committee is going to just shut him down. The board is going to shut him down. And it's after hours and he's closing up and some guy's like, hey, I just need a drink. He's like, oh, I can't do it. We're closed. He's like, come on, man. My wife left me. I just need one drink. Just give me a bourbon, please. And he's like, just give me a bottle of bourbon to take home. He's like, no, I can't. Please just do it. All right. He turns around, gives him a paper bag with a bottle. And the guy's like, Mr. Ignatowski, you did it again. You failed. This was a test. I'm with the board of the liquor and, you know, and he's like, can I say one thing in my defense? He says, yeah. He's like, takes it out of the bag. Seltzer. Now get the hell out of my bar and you tell all your friends to not come back. It was like a great moment, crowd applause. There you got it. That was it. That's what I think. That's kind of what Hockley probably thought you were putting him up to right there.
Boy, I didn't know if we would get back to the NHL scandal, but you did it successfully.
I get back. Don't you worry.
Things that you just accept because that's the way they are when you first experience it. And then in hindsight, once they end, you're like, what the hell was that? The applause breaks at sitcoms. Like Jack and the gals in the Three's Company apartment, like they would have to fill like 30 seconds of real time. The cameras would keep rolling the master shot of the three of them in the living room. They would just keep the cameras rolling, but the audience was applauding. And so then they were like, well, we have to just physically move around here. And they would just like pick up a pillow and they would pillow fight. That always was what the Jeffersons
did too. They're still arguing or they're fawning over each other, right? It's either... either the miscommunication was resolved or it keeps going. Yeah, so you're right. It's 20 more seconds of that.
So funny. Yeah, such a weird thing. It's like, well, that's what they have to do. Like, who decided that was a thing? And
it was before Netflix and anything could be 37 minutes or before podcasts where it didn't have to end exactly on the half hour.
And of course, if we're talking about old things, I mean, the single greatest move, the most distinctive thing in sitcom history, and I can't believe in our world of copycats, nobody has tried to steal it, is Mr. Roper. Yeah. Mr. Roper zings Mrs. Roper, then smiles at the camera, and then goes back into the scene, and nobody acknowledges it in the scene otherwise. Just the best.
The greatest. Well, Kevin Spacey tried it with House of Cards, and it didn't work out as well.
Is that what happened to him? I wondered where he went.
That was the beginning of the end.
He got pushed in front of a train, or he pushed somebody else in front of a train, and went downhill from there.
This Tim Peel should just come out and say he's gambling on the games, and that's going to make it all right.
What was the name of your WWE bad referee?
It was Danny Davis. Danny Davis came in. It was a great gimmick. He would... You know, he was cheating for the bad guys, for the heels,
and eventually was caught. $1 million man in Virgil.
That's right. And he became a bad guy wrestler. But that's what Tim Peel should do. And he should be like, what the hell? What am I supposed to do? The Sabres lose by more than two every game. What do you think? I'm not going to bet that?
Oh, I'd love to hate him if he only made good calls for the Islanders and Flyers. I'd hate him, but that would add more juice to an already fascinating NHL season.
Well, it would add some juice, yes, to an NHL season. I know what you're saying. Dave, what do you got? -3? Got
minus
one,
three.
One we're in gonna, the bank, one coming up, right?
We're going to kibitz. It's going to be a producer, Babyface Joel appreciation hour. And when we're not doing that, we will tackle March Madness, what's going on in the NHL East, get you right for the final days of the regular season in the NBA. And I want to figure out, one of my favorite subjects is, we mentioned boxing there. I'm going to ask Hench. He might have a good answer on this, is who would win the tournament of all the Rocky Balboa universe? You should make odds on that.
Because one of them, if you're including Tommy Morrison, was a professional fighter and a champion.
I know, but you can't look at him as Tommy Morrison. You got.
I know. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Sly Stallone would lose a fight to any of those guys in real life,
especially a real heavyweight champion of the world.
I also watched, as I said, Rambo 2. I think here's a good underdog play for you, and then I'll say my good nights.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tom Cruise in his prime could beat up Sly Stallone in his prime.
Oh,
I know Stallone throws the fists and everything, and he carries that big Rambo knife when he's playing Rambo, but I don't feel he's as skilled in the martial arts as Cruise. Cruise is like, you know, he's intense. You met him.
Yeah.
He's super intense about everything. He really loves, like, oh, I'm going to do mountain climbing in the next Mission Impossible. I have to become an actual mountain climber now. Same thing, like hand to hand. Fight to the death. It seems like he would handle
it. I don't know if it's the same
thing.
He'd handle
Sly.
I don't know if parkour skills translate to knocking somebody out who's 40 pounds bigger than you.
We got to do that. We should see if we could get a big battle royale of all A-list celebrities.
All right.
Ooh, who would win a fight among all the late night?
I mean, you're not counting like Wahlberg and those guys box. There's a few, you know,
that's another story we have to tell one day, is talk about meeting Joey Koser. Who'd we meet?
Ty Domi.
That's what it was like. That was fun. The most connected man on the face of the earth for some reason.
I came across that picture. I need to send that to you. Me, you, Randy, we took that picture. That was a fun one.
I want you to think about that too. Odds, and then I'll say my goodnights.
All right.
All the late night hosts. Who is favored in a fight to the
death? In a fight? Through history?
Let's go historic.
Fucking Letterman Tom his Snyder. Prime.
Carson is a good athlete, I guess. He played tennis and stuff, but he would be no.
It's got to be Tom Snyder. No, yeah.
I think you know what? I think Jimmy Kimmel might be the favorite.
Carson Daly over Carson Johnny, I think, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Carson Daly's a big dude.
No, that's fun. All right. So -3, you're going to chop that up with Hench. You got one in the can against all odds. The other day, we went over the Saturday games. Tomorrow night, we're going to go over the Sunday games and the college tournament, the Sweet 16. We just did a fun laugh lines, me, Rachel Bonetta, with Trayvon Free, Oscar-nominated director, a short film, Two Distant Strangers, really good. That's coming out. I think I could say it's coming out on Netflix very soon. Trayvon Free, so check that out. Lemon Pepper Parlay, guys. Kendrick Perkins, I believe, is back on the Betting Academy with Gina Paradiso. Hey, hit us up on email at theextrapointsgang@gmail.com. That's theextrapointsgang@gmail.com. Double E's in the middle there. And a reminder to all you out there who may feel like underdogs, please remember, you're all my favorites. Good night.